This is the last lecture. I will first take the time to kind of summarize what we did and try to connect all the different concepts and maybe clarify a few things. And then in the second part, I just want to do a very short introduction on fermionic path integral that may still be useful for when you will go to QFT. So during the summary, I will hopefully answer some of the questions that was asked at the end of the quiz for today. So so what is the central object that we see is the time evolution operator. And here, for simplicity, I'm just going again to use that H, look at the case where H is the Hamiltonian, is time independent. So yeah, here, so I want to come back on something like something I wrote at some point about, if you divide, so if T is your time interval and you divide it in two, so you go from 0 to T1, then T1 to T. Of course, you have this property T1 if T1 is between 0 and T. And as Rémy kind of mentioned it, this is valid not only in this case, it's valid in general. And even the, so usually, for most of the things we have been doing explicitly, we consider this simple case where H is time independent. But most of the things we have been doing can be generalized to the case where H is time dependent. And in particular, this property is indeed valid for, and you can even prove it explicitly using. So you remember that when H is time dependent, then U will be expressed as a path order exponential. Okay, so this is our central object here. And we started with what you were more familiar with, so the Heisenberg and Schrodinger picture. And so in the, let me write it here for the Schrodinger picture, what we need. So in the Schrodinger picture, state are time dependent, are going to evolve with time, and we have this radiation using the time evolution operator. And indeed, one representation we will be mostly interested in is the position representation, where then you're going to go back to the notion of wave function you're familiar with. So we're here, this I define it as and if now I apply this on this side of my equation, and I also introduce a resolution of identity. So again, there was one question in the quiz regarding when we need to consider discrete or integration. So here, definitely x, the operator x, as for spectrum, the all real number. So here you integrate over all possible real number. So here what you get, if I use this side of the equation now, okay, and this is, and here, this is my wave function, which is just x. Okay, so all the point is that indeed, if you know all the matrix element of your time evolution operator in the position basis, then you can get all your, you have all your information about your wave function. Okay, and this is what we called k. So here, if I use this notation, okay, and so this was our central object to start with for the path integral. Okay, so it's just the matrix element of our time evolution operator. Then, of course, we could go to the Heisenberg picture. We're here, so now operator are the one evolving with time. So, and we have this relation with still the time evolution operator that is our central object. So here I have a U dagger, U of T. And if now I consider the specific operator, the position one, okay, I can introduce the eigenstate for this operator at time t, where here t is considered as a instantaneous time. Okay, it's not the dynamical time. It's just labeling the fact that it's at time t that I consider my operator x. And here, then if now you try to write this object in term of this kind of vector, what you get if I don't want to get confused, yeah, so it's x prime. So let's, this is just the usual definition. I h t over h bar of x. And this is indeed by definition the bra for x t. And this would be the x zero. Okay. So you can indeed rewrite always the same object that we were interesting also in terms of Heisenberg objects. Okay, so we have this thing. This is the usual definition. And so now, oops. So this is our central object. We have these two pictures that everything here is written in terms of operators or vectors. Okay. And now the question was, do we have another representation? And this is now the path integral, where I guess this was more new for you, because now instead of having any operators, we're going to deal just with function. Okay. And so again, so we really started from this object with in the Schrödinger picture, and we managed to find another representation for this in terms of an integration over all possible paths. So this is x zero. So now we are going to integrate. So this integration is kind of formal, as we have seen. And we have an integration I over h bar s. Where here, the important point is that, so it's the exponential of the action, but the action is not, we are not only interested in the classical path, we're interested in all possible paths, such as this boundary condition are satisfied. So x at t equals zero is equal to x as an initial point. This is our path. And x at t is x prime, meaning that we consider all paths starting from this point to this point. Okay, so this is our kind of new representation. Then something that we did mostly by convenience is to do the Vick rotation. Okay, so where I tow, and so here you would have a minus and the Euclidean action instead of. Okay, so most of the objects that I'm going to write now are going to be using this weak rotation. So when we derive this object, if you remember, we started from that, and then we kind of,
In the Heisenberg picture, we have k on the last line. Should it be x prime t?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's the x prime. It's my final position. Thank you. Any more comments or questions? Okay, so if you remember, we derived this this object here is, or if you want, now that we are here, what is the precise meaning of this was really to consider this as, so here, if we look at the really precise meaning, was to consider that our time interval was divided into n subinterval, and then take, so write this object, in fact, is something written in terms of as a discrete thing, and take the limit n goes to infinity. Okay, so this is really, and we use that, the example we really treat this way, the only one, is the case of the free particle. And you remember that doing this explicitly is much more complicated to compute this object as in terms of operator. So it's much simpler to compute it in terms of operator than to compute it using this limit thing and in terms of discrete object. But still, it was kind of to really see what does it mean to have like, this definition. But then, so the next step, what we look at is because, so here, what is kind of new compared to the other approaches is now you kind of recover this notion of path that was totally lost in the usual formulation in terms of operators. So of course, one natural question is the classical path going to play a specific role, okay? And indeed, so that's why here we then look at, so let's go. On this board, we kind of look at the, so here, yeah, the question was, oh, we're summing over all paths. Is there something specific about the classical path? So is this classical path playing a specific role? So we look at the semi-classical expansion of our object. And so the result that we get is that this k now can be really written as an exponential of my, so here I'm Euclidean now, so meaning that I did this, where this action now is really evaluated on the classical solution, then times another term, where here we have this new boundary. This is our deviation, so it's the quantum fluctuation, if you want. And now we have a Gaussian integral. Sorry, this is 2-1. And we have a kind of generalized Gaussian integral where now we have an operator still here, or acting on this function u1 and u tau 2. So this is, so we have one first term, another term, and then this is equal to 1 plus some correction in h bar, where the next one, just to remember, was just this, so d tau. And the third derivative of the potential plus okay, so this is really the expansion that is valid for any action, okay, so any system. Then, of course, one important remark is that this A, the form of A here, is kind of nice because we have that this is, so it's the second derivative with respect to tau. And then it was a plus the second derivative with respect to x of v of x. And the delta of tau 1, tau 2. If I wrote everything in terms of tau 1. OK. So a few remarks that we had here is that, so this is valid for any system. Now, the point is that you see that if our system is described by a, what we call quadratic Lagrangian, then meaning that there is no higher order than the second order in x in the potential, then all this, the next term of the expansion are going to vanish. Okay, so we're going to get something exact. And so here, we in particular use that as an example to compute exactly k as a path integral for the harmonic oscillator. Okay, and also the important remark is that because of the form of A, we see that if we add any linear term in our potential, so for example, if we consider the harmonic oscillator plus a source term, then it's still the same. A is unchanged. Okay, so this was kind of an important remark because then it means that if you want to consider this, for example, problem that we're going to see many times, this term is still not going to contribute. This is still the same. So the only one is this one, okay? That is to compute what is x of c, so the classical path, and then the evaluation of the action. Okay, so this was one kind of approximation that, in fact, at the end, we didn't really use as an approximation because we kind of only focus on quadratic Lagrangian, so it was for us a way to find exact path integral for the exact path integral representation for some of this action. Okay, so this was kind of the first part. Then some of the question you had. So you see now, in any way, how can we use that? So if you have this as a new, it's a new representation. But if you have this, if you want to go back to the Schrödinger picture, you can. You're supposed to be able to find all your state or all your operators at any time. Okay. So now the question was also, what about, for example, the energy level? Okay, the energy spectrum. U is the time evolution operator. So how can we get, do we have access to the eigenvalue of this operator H within the path integral? So this was kind of a good question. So let me go here. So maybe I don't need that now. So one question was, do we have access to the energy spectrum? And yes, indeed, we can use either, and in particular, we focus on the ground state energy. And so for that, we could consider two kind of objects. So either what we called the partition function that is defined as a trace of U, okay? Well, usually we consider this boundary condition. And again, so this was in the quiz this morning, this yesterday. There are different ways to, you can compute this trace using different bases. So you can either use the position representation, you can use the eigen in the Hamiltonian eigenstate, so then you will get that it's an exponential of the sum of the exponential of minus beta En, where En are the energy level. And you could use, of course, the path integral representation, where within the path integral representation, this is really translated as a path integral over Oh. So I'm going to forget about the H bar. Where the fact that we are taking the trace here is going to be translated in this. Formalism as the fact that we are going to consider periodic or closed path. Okay, so this is now a path integral over all possible paths that are either periodic or closed. Okay, so this is in terms of the. And so how do you relate that to? So this is the path integral representation, but if you were using the Hamiltonian eigenstate, you will find that indeed you can relate that to the energy level, okay? And we introduce this quantity, and we also look at another quantity that was, in particular when we are interesting in only E0 here, which was just to choose this object, but with very simple boundary conditions, choosing x prime and x equal to 0. Okay, so here we could have something like this. And then this is something in terms of path integral, it's almost the same, except that you choose that x prime is equal to 0, and x prime prime is also equal to 0. And in terms of energy level, what you get is the same, except that you keep here the evaluation of your the wave function, for your energy level, evaluated at the point 0. Okay, but you now the point was that for both, you can recover E0 by taking the limit. So minus the limit of 1 over beta of the log of either this z or this k. And beta goes to infinity.
Sorry, I have a question about this part.
Yeah.
Because we choose one particular orbit that the first and last is equals to 0, but this is one in the continuum spectrum, so this is infinitesimal small compared to the partition function. How can we get engine level from this infinitesimal small quantity?
So you're talking about this factor here?
Yes.
So yeah, so to have access, you're asking about any energy level or just the ground state?
Just ground state.
Yeah, so the ground state, it's just that this is, so what is going to be anyway dominant, it's the term in E0. So it's with E0, and here you have like the wave, the function for n equals 0, okay, but it's a constant with respect to beta. So when you take the log, you're going to get a number. So when you take the log of this, for the first term, you get something like minus beta E0 plus log of.
Yes, this one is infinite large.
No, it's not, you don't sum over, so it's only, what do you think, it's infinitely large, and then you're going to divide by beta, so this is just something independent of beta, and take the limit, beta goes to infinity.
Yes, but I'm saying that although it's independent of beta, but it's infinitely large. Are we going to take the beta limit?
No, but you can choose state that behave nicely, especially that here you take this limit beta goes to infinity. So this term is still going to be negligible in this case.
Okay.
Okay, so so let's see. Okay, so this means that now we have access to the ground state, for example, let's just start, in terms of objects that can be indeed written in terms of path integral. Yeah.
When you wrote this out there, log of zk, what?
Yeah, so here it just means that you have the, you choose, you can define either E0 as a limit of 1 over beta of the log of z, this function, mm-hmm. or log of k. And for both cases, because here the term here is constant compared to beta divided by beta is going to go to zero. So you get the same, in the limit, you get the same result here. Okay? And yeah, so this is a choice, and you kind of see that indeed as the path integral, the two choices we have, we mentioned this kind of boundary condition that you can have. So here, this kind of boundary condition are called the Dirichlet boundary condition. And here, this one has the periodic boundary condition. And because, so then the question was, okay, so this is nice, but in particular, it's going to be very useful to go to the perturbation theory, meaning that we want to deal with a system that is described by a free part, which is usually the quadratic part. It's not have to be free in the sense of v equals zero, plus some lambda h interaction, where, yeah, we take that lambda can is kind of small, so we consider that as perturbation compared to the system. So then the idea here that we develop is that we can introduce, so the same, we have this relation that the z beta for our system that is perturbated, okay, can be written in terms of the same function in the case unperturbated, so it's just the zero part. Where we add a source term, a j, okay, and then we're going to perform some. So here you will have that this is exactly the same thing as if now you act with some functional derivative of where here this is part of the action, the interacting part of the action, okay? And then you will plug j equal to zero. And you can, of course, do that with the function k here, that is also a function of lambda. And you will get kind of the same. So here the functional derivative with respect to your source term with k zero now, but for which you add this source term, okay? And in both cases, then you take j equals zero. Just exactly the same thing, it's just that this object can be seen as kind of generating functional for your system. And you see that they are defined with these two different boundary conditions. And the main point here is that this object. So is can we compute exactly this object? And in general, the answer is yes. If so let me maybe go here on this one. So now the question was, what about this two object? Okay, whereas path integral, they are really given by the path integral of where here is the action for your quadratic system, for your free system, where you add this source term. And here, the difference between these two things is really only in the boundary conditions that you consider. Where here, we consider this periodic boundary condition. So x prime and here we consider the Dirichlet boundary condition. Okay, and the main point is that both of them can be expressed as this z0 beta when j equals 0 time 1/2 of something of the form j, here the periodic. So the only dependence in the source come from this term. Of course, you have some tau integration here that I didn't put. And here you have something very similar, where it's this object when j equals 0 that we know how to compute time 1/2 of where here my g p or gd are a Green's function for your system. Green. Okay, and they are just defined with two different boundary conditions, but the important point is that if you now look at the limit beta goes to infinity, you get the same result. Okay? So, and the Green function are going to be the Green function for your free system. So usually the one we consider was, so here, yeah, this form is valid for sure for the harmonic oscillator or for any quadratic. So this is the way that then, of course, the idea to get the perturbative expansion is to expand this, okay? So this is S of I, so this means that you have some lambda here. And then you expand that at any the order you want, and you get your you get your correction to compared to the free system. Any, yeah?
Why do we have the Dirichlet boundary conditions in the propagator?
Sorry?
Why do we have the Dirichlet boundary conditions? Like, is there a reason for choosing this condition?
But it just here, yeah, it simplifies kind of a lot because in fact, if you do explicitly the calculation, and I think this was a remark the other course, is that at some point you may also have a term in J time X of C zero tau, and the fact that we choose this boundary condition make that this term is going to vanish. So it's kind of term that make think that more simpler to have this form. Otherwise, you could maybe have a linear term in J or something like this. Okay? So like the choice of this condition make that things are simpler. And the nice point is that in the limit, anyway, you don't see the difference. And this is also related to what we seen yesterday, where we define another object. So you had, there was another question. Yeah, Elizabeth? No?
Yeah. A similar question about the boundary conditions, but I guess like why can we have two different boundary conditions?
Well, you see that here you define, so we started with two different objects, okay? That is either the trace of U or it's just K here, it's just a specific matrix element of your matrix U, okay? So you started with two different objects written in terms of operator. One, you consider just a matrix element, and the other, you consider the trace, meaning that you're going to sum over all the diagonal elements, okay, of your operator. So then the question was how these things are translated, because both, you see that both are, anyway, matrix element of U, okay, of this time evolution operator. So then they can all be written in a very simple, you see that the path integral is very simple, okay? Usually you don't see the U is hidden in the form of your action. Okay, so here, since we consider the same U for both things, the action term here is the same thing. The only thing that is going to differ is that which path are we allowed to consider? Okay, which path are we summing over? This is what is going to make the difference in these two objects. And so you see that one object is you sum over all. So we just implement what was, so maybe K is simpler, okay, because it's just a matrix element. So you just really translate this by, this is equal to zero and this one is equal to zero, okay, just a given matrix element. Then Y for the partition function, you can get rid of course, of the trace, because so the partition function in terms of the trace is in terms of the k is written by you sum over all possible k x here, and here the fact that you take the diagonal element is implemented in the fact that x is equal to x here, okay. But here, because you sum over all, you take all of them. Okay, so you see that here what you would request, you could then write this as the path integral where you keep this dx, and then you just say that is going to be the path integral of always this action, where here the boundary condition are x of zero is equal to, x of zero is equal to x of t, is equal to a specific x here that is fixed. But the point is that then you sum over all x here. So this means that, in fact, it just means that you just request that x of zero is equal to x of t, and you consider all this path. Okay, satisfying. So meaning all the closed path or all the periodic path here. Okay, so this is the way you see that this appear in the boundary condition here for defining this object as path integral. And then, of course, when you go to adding a source or you want to define the thing for the perturbated system, the idea is that this is not, you keep the same boundary condition, okay? You just change either your action now or, so here it's in terms of the action that we change. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, so I don't understand your notation again. When you write beta bar j?
Yeah, so here this just means that considering the zero means that it's a free system, okay? So the action here, did I write it explicitly? Yeah, here it's defined, here, fine. So here this, what do I mean? I mean that I consider the free action, but I add my source term that is j here. And I see this object now as a functional of J.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's why I put it here. It's because then I want to take functional derivative, so I want to see this object as a functional of this function J of tau here. But it's just added as a source term, so with a linear term here. Okay? Any more questions? Yeah?
Just in the difference between Z and beta and K. K is a path integral, but Z is an integral of path integral in the sense that we sum over all initial periodic boundary conditions.
Yeah, so you could write it as, it was just what I erased here, as an integral of path integral, but then what is also nice with this path integral thing is that you just need to specify which path you're considering. So this additional integration over X can be encoded in which path you consider here, because it was only telling you something about that. It was just telling you that indeed it's not only a closed path that has the initial point and final point is equal to a fixed x. This x can take all the real value, so it's all closed paths, all possible closed paths. Okay, that's why. But you're right. If you do step by step, it would be. But then you can kind of put this additional integration in the way you define your path that you consider. So then you end up with only one path integral, just with a different boundary condition. So the trace here is really incorporated in the path integral definition inside the Okay. And then here, so the point is that you get this object. So then, of course, you're not going to compute that exactly. You're going to go order by order in lambda. And because we have this expression here to know which term are going to appear, you can use the weak theorem that is going to tell you, depending on how many derivatives you have. So of course, we really seen the weak theorem in the case of where we consider endpoint function, meaning that the derivative we're going to act with are taken at different points. Here, you will have something a bit different because many of the tau are going to be equal, okay? But still, you can still use the weak theorem, and it's just going to tell you that some of the tau, it's what you had in the tutorial yesterday, are going to be equal. So instead of having open legs in terms of diagrams, instead of having open legs, you're going to get some loops things. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, here, our final thing, are there supposed to be integrals in
exponent? Yeah. That it's just tricky, like. You have two tau, sorry. Okay, so just to conclude quickly on that, the other part we've seen. And for that, so this part was on the side of the Schrodinger picture because we used everything in the Schrodinger picture. Then the other thing was more, to what we did yesterday was to define this kind of object that is also a very important object for to get the physical property of your system. If you have access to the endpoint function of your system, then you kind of know your system. Okay, and here again, the same idea was done that to get to the E0, here you take a limit beta goes to infinity. So here we kind of shown yesterday that here you're so going to define this as taking the limit of, here you have a product of and an exponential of. And so, this was this object defined this way. And so one important point is that if both the numerator and denominator are defined using the same boundary condition here, of course, to compute it explicitly, at some point you will have to choose boundary condition, then this object is independent of the boundary condition, which is what we expect, because here this zero is really the vacuum state, meaning it's really, so it's the eigenvalue for the Hamiltonian, and it's not x equals zero, okay? So there is no position here. It's really another basis. So you don't expect any position thing appearing, whereas here everything is defined in terms of position boundary condition. Okay, but so the point is that if you choose the same here, then this object is independent. And another important object that we introduce is the generating functional that can be really seen as here the ratio between when you don't have anything here, but you have a source and divided by when j equals zero. So what you get here in this as a path integral is that indeed you integrate over all possible paths of exponential of minus s x of tau d tau, where here now the fact that we took this limit beta goes to infinity is encoded in the fact that tau goes to minus infinity plus infinity. Okay. And you need to divide by the denominator, which is same thing except that you don't have a source term. And again, it's really important that here, when you compute this object, you choose the same boundary condition. So here, this thing now can be used to compute exactly any endpoint function if the S you consider here is something you know how to compute exactly, meaning usually it will be the free particle or the harmonic oscillator or any quadratic thing. So in this case, you can get the endpoint function as exactly. But then if you consider a system that is more like, again, of this form, then the Z of G of lambda is going to be obtained by acting with functional derivative on on this one, okay? And then again, to get all the possible contribution, the simplest, so you can use both of these boundary conditions to define this Z of J. And the difference is that here in this integration now, you go to minus infinity to plus infinity. And so you see that indeed, it's also what we found before is that whatever is the boundary condition that you're going to use, it's going to give you the same result, and it's what we're expecting here, okay? And so here, we need to do this step, then it's related to Vick's theorem.
Sorry, one more question on the boundary condition.
Yeah.
So for the pure algebraic boundary condition, we have the precision and the same for the start point and ending point. What about the velocity? Are they also the same?
Sorry, can you?
The x is the same. What about the velocity, x prime, x dot?
No, we don't. Fix anything about the velocity here.
Even for the pure audit boundary condition.
Yeah, you don't need to add the constraint on the velocity. Okay, so this is kind of the summary of what we did. So you should have almost everything on this three or four boards. So any question before I kind of do a very brief introduction on fermionic path integral?
So the generating functional, that's not the same as our particle
function. As this one?
Yeah.
But it's more just the generating functional would be when you take the limit beta goes to infinity here. What you call here, the generating functional for this object. Then there are some, in terms of terminology, usually what you call a generating functional is a functional that allow you to get all the information about your system. So kind of this could be seen as generating functional for this object, but it's just more particularly what is called really the generating functional is for the vacuum to vacuum expectation value, but you know, yeah, it's kind of some subtleties of, but you see that it's kind of very close. And also the point is that this one is normalized in such a way that when j equal to 0 is equal to 1, and it also allows the fact that you get rid of this boundary condition that you choose, okay? Because you take the ratio of two things. Okay, so up to now, everything that we did is valid for both particles, so bosonic particles, okay? And so this means that indeed we use the fact we're starting from this Schrödinger picture and then the Heisenberg picture, where the position and momentum operator satisfies the usual commutation relation, okay, between P and X. So now, if we want to discuss about fermions, we need to consider operators that are not going to satisfy commutation relation, but anti-commutation relation. And these fermions are going to obey like the Fermi-Dirac statistics and also the Pauli principle that is going to tell you that the state can only be empty. so with a zero particular vacuum, or occupied ones, okay? So these are some properties of the fermion that, so you're going to deal with that more in details in the, I guess, QFT course. So you will come back on this property, but the fact that you have this property is related to the fact that you need this anti-commutator, okay? So, yeah, let's try to start. I don't have too much time, so I don't. So everything we did was for bosons, meaning that they were satisfying this commutation relation. So if I write this in this order, then I get minus. But now we want to go to fermion. And so here, we're going to get that it's going to be defined, yeah, maybe this is, in terms of operators that are going to be anti-commuting, OK? Yeah, and in fact, the analogy with, so what we wrote is still in this path, it's in terms of x and p. Well, p usually we're integrating over, but we could also define, so this path integral again is what we call the configuration path integral, and you could work with the phase space path integral, meaning that you would keep, if you remember when we did this integration, we did the integration over the p. We introduced some p. P resolution of identity, and then we integrate. We did explicitly the integration over that. If you don't do this integration, then you can still write this as a path integral where the S will be really interpreted as the P X dot minus H, okay, where you will see explicitly the Hamiltonian function appearing. And this would be what we call the phase space function. So with the path integral that we work with as is using this x and p. But we could also work with a different representation, in fact, that is going to be more close to what we're going to use for fermion, which would be here the A and A dagger operator that can be obtained from p and x, and then work with what we call holomorphic path integral, OK? But so, yeah, it's not so important for now. It's just that to really make the connection, you will see that, it's not maybe the more natural. So here, we're going to consider two operators that anti-commuting. So this bracket now means the anti-commutator. And so this is in terms of operators. And we're going to, maybe it's going to. But when we are in the path integral, okay, we don't have operator anymore. And now we have commuting function, p, it's just function, okay? So here in the path integral, you have more something that is replaced like this with just function, real function. So these are real number now, so they're just commuting. And in the fermion, then this should be replaced by something that would be more of the form where here, these are now numbers, but because they are not commuting, they are called, so they are still classical number compared to operator. As here, it's a number. If it's evaluated at t, it's just a real number. But here is what we call the Grassmann number that you've seen yesterday. So this is a different level. Grassmann numbers. So I'm not going to go back on. I think most of you had a look yesterday at this calculus in terms of Grassmann numbers. So I will, of course, remind some property that I'm going to use, but I'm also going to post the solution in the lecture note. sorry, but so this is kind of the idea. But let's start with at this level, at the level of the operator, and try to see if we can write the example of what would be the equivalent of the harmonic oscillator, but the fermionic harmonic oscillator. Okay, so here we want to look at the one state Hamiltonian. By one state, I mean I have only particle, but in fact, even in the bosonic case, this is a kind of limitation to what we have been doing, is that we have only considered one state object, okay? There was always one dimensional. And here we want to deal with the example of the fermionic harmonic oscillator. And the fermionic harmonic oscillator can be defined in terms of this anti-commuting operator. Very similar to what you know, but except that you need to have some sign when you anti-commute. So here we have this relation, and in addition to, so C, C dagger satisfy this, and then C with C is zero. So it's, but now be careful, it's an anti-commutator, and C dagger you can still introduce. So here we are at this level, at the level of operator, okay, before going to the path integral. We can still introduce a number operator and a basis for this operator. So he has two eigenvectors that we're going to call 0 and 1. So we're going to consider the Hilbert space now spanned by these two eigenvalues. Okay, we're here, if you look at, so these are the eigenvector of C dagger C, and if now you look at what is the action of C dagger on 0, you get 1. So it's kind of the same as the creation and annihilation operator that you're familiar with. Then you get 0. C dagger on 1, you also get 0. And C on 1, you get the 0 state. Okay? And these are, so the eigen, again, the eigenvector of N. Okay, so now let's see what we can do with this system and if we can write the path integral representation for that. Okay, so this, what does it mean here? This means that, yeah, maybe I should write still on this board, an arbitrary function vector can be decomposed on this basis, where here, for the moment, F0 and F1 are just complex number as usual. But we now want to integrate, to consider new states that are going to be equivalent to the current state, so are going to be current state for this operator. So for this, we need to introduce some Grassmann number. And this is going to be the Grassmann number that's going to appear in the path integral formulation. So here I want to consider the state theta, and the dual is going to be, we have to be careful with the order now. So here, yeah, this is a 0 plus 1, where here are indeed Grassmann number. And so these are the current state and eigenstate of C and C dagger. So now if you can check explicitly that if you act with C on theta, then you get, and I'm going to write that this is also equal to, and okay, so for the first equality, I just use the property of how C is acting on 0 and 1, okay? And use the definition of theta in terms of 0 and 1. Then where is this second equality is coming from? Which property am I using here? Why can I write this? So here, of course, if you expand what is theta in term of 0, 1, okay, you use the definition, you indeed got 0 times theta, and then you would get 1 times theta square, okay? And so what is theta square?
0.
Okay, 0, yeah, good. So this is because we are dealing with Grassmannian numbers. So you see that we're going to be able to simplify a lot just because, yeah.
You're writing like your ket and then your Grassmann number. Is that important? Or
yeah, it's going to become important. So in this case, not totally because it's like we consider that's real, but then because of reading with Grassmann number, the order is going to be important at some point, or because when you want to change the order, you're going to get some minus sign going on. So it's kind of better to choose one ordering. And then things are more cleaner, you will see. But we will see an example where it's really important to have this ordering. Okay, so you can do the same thing. Good. With this C, now C dagger acting on the one. And here, if you apply just again the definition and what C dagger is acting, you just get. And again, using the fact that we are dealing with complex with a Grassmann number, then we get this relation. So as an exercise, I let you prove, or I will do it if I have time because we will need it, that the scalar product between two of these vectors is equal to, so the order is important, so yeah. And this can be written as just the exponential of this. Okay, so to write it, to get this expression, you just need to write explicitly to expand that, okay, to use this definition. And then use the fact that you have Grassmann numbers, so you won't have. And of course, the 0 and 1 are normalized. And then this comes from the fact that, indeed, if you expand the exponential because of Grassmann number, the rest of the component are going to be equal to 0. OK. So this is just very quickly what would be how we can describe this kind of equivalent of the fermionic harmonic oscillator. So now, from this system, can we write a path integral? So as for the bosonic case we have seen, the starting point should be the, if you remember, it's the time evolution operator, okay? So now that we have an explicit H here, let's see what would be. So yeah, just for simplification here, I'm going to consider that just to simplify the calculation. I'm going to focus on this Hamiltonian. Okay. Just a bit simpler. And what is nice is if you look at H0 squared now, you can check explicitly that indeed this is omega H0, okay? So check it. And so the time evolution operator, you can write it. So the definition is the same. So it's the exponential of minus H zero t here. And so I want to expand that order by order. Okay. So it's going to be identity minus h zero t plus h zero squared divided by 2t, but I'm going to use that h squared is that. Okay. So I get plus omega h zero, and then I got a t squared divided by 2. Then I could go to the next order where, again, it's going to be minus h zero cube, but I use again this thing. So what I get is that this is going to give me minus omega squared h zero time. Okay, and so what you see is that this is going to be, in fact, can be written as a linear function of h zero. Okay, you can go order by order. And so even you can say that this is omega times identity. I'm going to simplify by omega. I factorize by omega here. Then I get the h zero. And this is, so if I factorize by omega h zero, what I get is the exponential of minus e omega t. I'm missing the first term, so minus 1. And the sign here is with a plus time h zero divided by omega. Okay, so this is just recoupling all these terms gave you that. Okay, so this was the first step, is to consider this operator. Then the next step is to consider matrix element of this operator. Okay, what we're going to write as the path integral are the matrix element of the time evolution operator. So here I'm going to choose a specific basis that is not the same one as the one we choose for the bosonic case. I'm going to choose this current state for the for C and C dagger, which are okay. So here I want to compute matrix element.
Sorry, is there a I in the I of mu t?
No, so here I choose this so as we did with it get
patient.
So there is no I in my definition. So then you can either interpret that as weak rotated or
okay.
But I'm using this the same object as we.
But you haven't
because there's an error.
Oh, yeah, so there is no I then. Thank you. Yeah, you wrote an I. Sorry. Okay, thanks. And so I'm going to choose this specific basis, so the eigenstate of C and C dagger. So I want to compute this object now. And so again, so this object is just given by that. Okay, so here you need to use this property that you just use here, and then exploit check what are the matrix element of H zero. Okay, so here you can check that this what you get. So all these calculations are kind of simple, but it's good that you do them because then you will get kind of many of the simplifications come from the fact that you're using Grassmann number. So it's kind of good. So this can be rewritten as just an exponential. So this is just a real number. So you can still say that this is the exponential of this product times this real number. Okay, because in the, so it's an exponential with an exponential within, but it's a, so again, the equivalent in this case, that in the bosonic case, would be to consider really the holomorphic formalism. So in the holomorphic formalism, you will work with square integrable analytic function. And then the idea is to associate so complex but classical variables to the creation and annihilation operators. As here, we have the equivalent of the creation and annihilation operator that are anti-commuting operator. And to that, we associate this Grassmann number. Okay, so of course, in the case of a bosonic thing, it will be just complex number that will be related to the current state for the harmonic oscillator. And this number would be, yeah, good. And then the path integral can indeed be written. You can represent, even in the bosonic case, we could have represent, in this, at least in the case of the harmonic oscillator, this H in terms of creation and annihilation operator, and then act on the current basis for this operator and start from here, okay? But so, yeah, it's another picture, but it's also kind of a picture that would be also useful. Then the interpretation is not as maybe simple, but it's also nice when we want to go to the many particle system, okay? Here we just consider one particle. So when you want to consider many particle, it's then related to the formalism of second quantification. Okay, so then the third step is to follow the same procedure that in the case, meaning that we want to divide our time interval, okay, into n subinterval. So here, we want to write that u of t can be written as u of t divided, where t is divided by n. And then take the power n. And for that to be valid, you just need to check that indeed you can check. So exercise. Explicitly that for any tau prime between 0 and t, you indeed get this relation as expected. And this you can do it using, just using this. So this is the definition. So this is your definition of your time evolution operator, okay? So here, yeah, this is just given by. So if you have that, then you have this, okay? So here we divide. Time interval into n subinterval. Okay. And then we want to take the limit n goes to infinity. So the time t divided by n has to be very small, okay? And so this means that we can take, as before, a kind of, we can take the expansion of this time evolution operator to the first order, okay? So where should I go? Can you read here? Okay, so maybe I'm not going to keep that. Okay, so let's use this one. So now again, we want to, we do exactly what we did in the bosonic case, meaning that since we are dealing with a very small time interval for each kind of, so each of these elements, u of zero t divided by n, t divided by n is a very small time interval, so we can look at the expansion of the matrix element of this operator only to the first order, okay? So here, because we want to take then n goes to infinity, this means that kind of t divided by n goes to zero, okay? So this means that here we can use, and you see it was written as so now I'm using this thing here. So the point is that because now t is t divided by n and this is very small, okay, I can do the expansion of this exponential and have something just linear in t. Okay, so here I'm get that this is 1 plus, so this is unchanged, it's just a number, but the exponential of omega t minus omega t is now so this is when t is very, yeah, or it's t divided by n if you want. And so this can be recast again as an exponential, but it's just an exponential that is simpler. So this is the exponential of I kind of okay, so this is the step where we divide the subinterval into n, the time interval into n subinterval, and because then each subinterval is very small, we can go to the first order.
Sorry, is that still t over n?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can write it just, yeah. I want to write, thanks. Then what was the other, the next step in the bosonic formula? Once we had this u of t written as a product of very small u of t, what did we do? To get to the path integral, you remember? Yeah, some identity. So of course here we are interested in the position representation. So we introduce this x just to write that indeed our final propagator can be seen as a product of many propagators where we integrate over all possible steps. So here the idea is the same, but we want to use these bases, okay? So here, so now it's to introduce resolution of identity. So really the steps are very similar to what we did. And I'm going to tell you that this is indeed the relation. So you remember, maybe we're going to do it together because just you need to remember what does it mean to integrate with Grassmann number. Do you remember what you've seen yesterday? Yeah, it's the derivative, very good. And so this is identity. But so let me maybe expand that. So what does it mean here? This means that, so this is the result now. This is like kind of proof if you want. So here we're going to use the definition of the state in terms of the Grassmann number and the 0-1 basis, okay? And here now I'm just writing what is this exponential. Since it's Grassmann number, it's just really 1 minus okay, and so just if you use the fact that is indeed a derivative, so then you have to be careful just with the order because you remember that the derivative with respect to theta is anti-commuting with theta. So that's why you had the Leibniz rule with a minus if you wrote it explicitly. Yeah, so this is the order. So now if you expand that, okay, and you do things explicitly, so the derivative. So the only term that are going to stay is because when you have this thing. So here it's going to give you with 0, 0, and you have a minus, but you start differentiating with theta, so it's going to, you need to permute them, so you're going to get a plus, then you derive with this one, so it's going to give you the 0, 0 term. And then you also have a 1, 1 term, where here you don't need to change the order, you're going to differentiate with theta, and then with theta star. So at the end, if you do that carefully, you indeed get that this is 0, 0, plus 1, 1, which is indeed the identity on for your Hilbert space you're considering. Okay, so you just use this definition, and it's kind of straightforward. Okay, so now we can go back to our time. And I'm going to give you what we get. So the idea is now that this matrix element can indeed be written as, when at the limit when n goes to infinity, as a product. So we divided our time interval into n, so we need to introduce n minus 1 resolution of identity. Okay, between each steps, so it's n minus 1. So here the order, yeah, you start with this one. And I'm going to tell you that this can be written as an exponential of what we're going to interpret as a discrete action. Minus s with an epsilon here, theta. Okay, so we're at the stage where in the bosonic things, we wrote everything as a limit before interpreting it. And so we had the discrete action before interpreting it as, okay, so this is the exponential of minus theta n star theta n minus s of epsilon of theta theta star, okay? And with explicitly this action here is as something a similar form as before, k equal 1 to n of plus some omega epsilon, where epsilon is t divided by n. So here, okay, let me write it here. Where epsilon is t divided by n. And we define that the theta zero is my initial, kind of the equivalent of my initial theta, so theta prime, and theta n is and so now if you want to take the limit, so then this would be the last step, so maybe I don't need the last step would be to take the limit formally, okay, then you get a kind of generalized path integral with Grassmann path. So then you will have to, next step will be to understand what is this notion of Grassmann path. But this will be maybe discussed a bit in the tutorial this afternoon. So we're here, again, you choose the boundary condition. So of course, because we didn't choose some position operator, the notion of path is not in the configuration space, so it's maybe not so intuitive. Then where we will have this merger term and an exponential that is written as so here it should be think I have a dot here, but
yeah,
I need to check a derivative. So this is really just generalizing the result that we have. Of so here it should be more t prime maybe, and I'm missing a term, which is this one. Okay, so this would be kind of the abstract, if you take this limit, whatever is the limit meaning, you kind of have the generalization to what we wrote in terms of now Grassmann number and Grassmannian path, okay? So in the tutorial this afternoon, so it's in two parts. The first part will be, we're going to give you some interview questions, meaning questions that you will have at the interview. as one of your first question, and you're going to work by pair to kind of ask you the question, and the other one is going to answer. But the second part of the tutorial, if you have time, is going to be on this fermionic path integral. If you don't have time to do it, that's fine. I will post the solution, and it's also, yeah, it's, you're mainly going to, I'm not sure that in QFT1 you're going to see fermionic path integral, but for sure in QFT2 you will. You will, so yeah, you still have some time to think about it. So here, a few remarks to conclude. Everything we have done is valid for one state system, whatever is the bosonic or fermionic case. The next step would be, of course, to generalize that to allow n particle states. And in the bosonic case, it will be then quite adapted to work with this holomorphic representation that I was mentioning, that where you start writing everything in terms of your creation and annihilation operator, and to consider the second quantization framework at the level of operators, okay? And so the path integral construction we have just shown here in the fermionic case, okay, is quite similar to the path integral if you were working for bosonic with this holomorphic formalism, and where in the bosonic formalism you would have complex numbers that are here just replaced by these Grassmann numbers, okay? And of course here we work with one Grassmann number, or here two in fact, but it can be generalized to an arbitrary number, okay? And then, but of course, you will have to be really careful if you have more than one fermion, because then the notion of fermionic vector state is kind of tricky, and this is related to the Pauli principle. But this year we'll see that in QFT. And of course, the next step is going to consider fields. Okay, so instead of considering just function, you're going to consider fields. Okay, so I'm going to conclude here. I can take any questions, then I see you this afternoon.